Thank you, Fred, for those songs, and appreciate the attendance of everyone here this morning. You know, people that keep track of things indicate that on average, approximately 150,000 people worldwide pass away. That's 4.5 million people a month that die, a number that exceeds the population of Dallas and Los Angeles combined. Add to that the number of people who have lived since the creation of the earth, and it's a staggering number. Looking at just those in the New Testament times, how many of these people have died without knowing Christ? What fate awaits them? Do they really rest in peace, as so many tombstones and grave markers say, or do they find a different reality beyond the grave? I won't try to re-preach the excellent information that Kyle has given us about what happens between our death and the judgment, but we do know that in 2 Corinthians 5:10 it says we must all appear before the judgment seat of Christ. After the judgment, the final destination for those who did not die in the Lord, whose names were not found in the book of life, will be eternal banishment to the lake of fire or hell. Revelation 20:15 and John 5:29. So given the possibility of an eternal punishment in hell, some may ask, is this fair? Is an eternal sentence to hell a just punishment for those who died with unrepentant sins out of a covenant relationship with God? Many people will answer this with a resounding no. They will contend that the punishment surely does not fit the crime. This response reveals both a lack of understanding of the severity of the crime and the character against whom the crime has been committed. Such thinking deserves further investigation. First, God alone has the right to determine what is fair. Justice allocated by him is not a man-derived standard outside of God that he must uphold. Justice will be determined according to God's holy character. Now, we as people living on earth at this time do have standards of justice, because God is a righteous God who establishes right and wrong himself. God himself is justice personified, if you will. He has set up governments and laws, which without them would mean his creation would have to try to exist in total anarchy. As it is, we are created in his image with innate feelings of fairness and rules of order and some forms of discipline to follow, with general guidelines that a decent society must adhere to. But secondly, the punishment we receive for violation of standards, even in our human arena, is in direct proportion to the one we've offended. So let's say you leave the building this morning and you step on an ant in the parking lot and kill it. No one will care. What if you accidentally kill a dog or a cat? Some will care. And you might even be arrested if it wasn't an accident and there might be cruelty involved. However, if you kill a man or a human, that's a real problem. And you're likely going to jail, maybe for life. If you kill the president, you probably won't last past that minute because the Secret Service will probably respond with lethal force on the spot. So just punishment is determined by the value of the one offended. With our sin and rebellion, we have offended the one true and holy God whose value and worth cannot be measured. Hell, therefore, is not only just, it is also right and good as an earned punishment in the eyes of God. How could a loving God send people to hell, people will ask. The answer is, it's precisely because God is loving that he will send people to hell. God deserves his glory, and it is unacceptable to be robbed of that glory by man. This is not a selfish love, but a perfect knowledge that anything short of the glory of God is sin, Romans 3:23. Yes, God shows love, but requires justice and righteousness by his very nature, and he is not pleased when his laws are broken. God will always do what's right, which is why a loving God can send sinners to hell, because it's the right thing to do, given the heinous nature of our crimes against heaven, especially when the person has made their own choice to reject the saving grace of Jesus and not avail themselves of opportunities to avoid their deserved punishment. Think of it, when an unrepented murderer is sentenced for his crime, his punishment is acceptable and just. Why? Because a rational person will hate evil and love good. So it is with God. A loving God is perfectly capable and consistent with his own character, even in sending people to hell because of his commitment to righteousness and justice. I can still hear the objector. I could never send someone to hell, no matter how much I hated them or for what they did or didn't do. Hell is just too harsh. Do they believe that they're more compassionate than God? More loving than God? No way is that the case. We must believe what God has decreed and spoken in his word. He is omnipotent and all-knowing. We as humans are fallible and limited to and limited by our own experiences. We must humble ourselves to admit the truth of God's decrees and his goodness in contrast to our sinfulness and limited understanding. Remember that God says, "My ways are not your ways and my thoughts are not your thoughts," as we read in Isaiah 55:8. The punishment of the wicked in hell will be so terrible that Jesus said, "If your hand causes you to sin, cut it off. It is better for you to enter into life maimed rather than having two hands to go into hell, into the fire that shall never be quenched, where the worm does not die and the fire is not quenched." Mark 9:43-48. I used to wonder about the non-dying worm, and I have decided it's a symbolism for the eternal punishment of hell and the fact that a lowly worm or even a man will not be destroyed or burned up, as you want to think of it, and will not pass out of existence in hell. A theory that seems to give comfort to millions who want to dismiss their punishment in hell as a temporary thing to be endured for a bit and then nothing. What else will hell be like? Well, it won't be a sort of uncomfortable place where you can see others walking around you, maybe recognize some drinking buddies you knew and commiserate with each other as, "How did we manage to end up here? Didn't we go to church now and then, at least on Easter and Sunday when nothing else took up our time? Weren't we basically good people? We didn't rob banks, beat our spouses, cheat on our taxes too much." But the Bible says that the cowardly, the unbelieving, the abominable, murderers, sexually immoral, sorcerers, idolaters, and all liars shall have their part in the lake, which burns with fire and brimstone, which is the second death, meaning separation from God. Revelation 21:8. So man's definition of what would be an acceptable life offered to God while here on earth is often worlds apart from the pattern required by God. Hell is also described as a place of boundless misery and regret. Sometimes I wonder if the people who refused our efforts to teach them and lead them to Christ will remember their rejection of the gospel, and what would they give to have that opportunity back? I think they will. In hell, you will be subjected to the most vile, immoral, insolent, disrespectful, and violent people you can imagine who have ever lived, and that's not all of the horrible environment one will be subjected to. The devil and his angels will be there, Matthew 25:41. You know, the devil preyed on you your entire life, so of course you can assume this treatment will continue if you find yourself in hell, where you will have absolutely no escape provided by God, since you will be cut off from his love and mercy in that place. Secondly, as we previously stated, it will be absolutely miserable. Matthew 13:42 says there will be wailing and gnashing of teeth and all manner of things and people who offend. Don't believe the jokes that portray hell as just a collection of those who weren't quite good enough to make it to heaven. but will spend an eternity with friends who will help pass the ages in camaraderie, because the reality is that the place is described as outer darkness. It would be the blackest darkness you can imagine, as discussed in Matthew 8:12. Ever been to a cave like Carlsbad Caverns and where they turn the lights off for a few minutes and you literally can't see your hand in front of your face? That might approximate the total and complete darkness of hell. Yet there will also be everlasting, tormenting fire at the same time, Matthew 25:41. You know, our minds would automatically think that fire would produce some sort of light. But our omnipotent God is not bound by the laws of physics as we know them, and he will have no problem producing ultimate darkness and tormenting fire at the same time. Third, hell will be everlasting, as revealed in Matthew 25:46. Our human finite minds cannot comprehend eternity. Everything we do while here on earth has a beginning and an end, and that's just what we've come to expect of everything. And it would be pretty much easy to tell yourself that you could put up with pretty much anything for a while, and then maybe it'll get better, or you will just pass out of existence. After all, would a loving God punish someone forever? Yes, he would, and he will, if we fail to obey his will while here on earth. Revelation 14:11 says there is no rest, night and day, symbolically meaning all the time, since it will be total darkness all the time, as we've previously discussed. Fourth, the residents of hell will be removed from the presence of God. The Apostle Paul writes in 2 Thessalonians 1:9, these shall be punished with everlasting destruction from the presence of the Lord and from the glory of his power. Some will key in on that word destruction and grasp for a hope that they will eventually be destroyed. Not so, for although the word destruction is used, it is plainly described as everlasting, having no end. All that is good, pleasant, or enjoyable will be totally withdrawn from the one in hell. Lastly, and perhaps the most saddest of all, is that hell will be occupied by many who almost made it to heaven, but let the cares and entanglements of this life prevent it. We're talking about people who knew the word, and maybe were faithful Christians at one time, but fell away. Imagine the terrible, unending, crushing regret of those who ended up in hell knowing that they knew better along the way, but still made choices while here on earth to end up in that place. Yes, we make a daily choice to serve God and escape hell, or else we are against him. As we read in Matthew 12:30, he is not with me is against me, and he who does not gather with me scatters abroad. But the good news is, by placing your trust in Jesus, confessing him, being baptized, and obeying his commands, will let you escape all the horrible things we've discussed this morning. In hell is darkness and misery. In heaven there is light and joy. Hell will be full of insolent sinners and the devil and his angels. There will be no tears, no sin, no temptation in heaven. Being in hell is to be cut off from the love and mercy of the Savior. In heaven, worshiping and praising him will be an ongoing, sweet activity. I don't want to go to hell. Do you? Well, of course not. But don't let your actions say otherwise. Be the kind of Christian you should be, here and now, and avoid this terrible fate. And instead, spend an eternity with God, Christ, the angels, and the saved from all generations in unbelievable bliss and joy. It's your choice. Thank you for your attention.